So what I'd like to do now is I would like to begin by introducing again Terry Robinson. And Terry, if you want to start and maybe just speak very briefly about your career path, your education, any information that you would like to share.
Sure.
Okay. Thank you, Terry.
Do you guys need me to use the mic, or can you hear me if I talk like this?
I think the mic might be on.
Okay. Hi, everyone. I'm Terry Robinson. Just to give you a little bit of background on me, I grew up in Northwestern Ontario, and I went to university at Lakehead University, so don't hold that against me. I got my degree in kinesiology in the 90s, and I did do some work as a kinesiologist for a little while, and then couldn't really find permanent employment there, so I found a job working for a nonprofit organization in Thunder Bay for a few years. Got bored of that and decided to go back to school and join Confederation College, and did a one-year post-diploma in human resources. As I was completing the course, I was told of what's called the Ontario Internship Program, which is a two-year internship program for different disciplines that are offered within the Ontario government, human resources being one of them. And so I applied on my graduating, as I was graduating that year, and had to go through a normal screening process, interview, and got selected. And it's a two-year program, so I did one-year rotation in Thunder Bay in a regional office. And then I thought, well, better chances of staying with the Ontario government, I should move to Southern Ontario. It didn't matter if it was directly in Toronto or not, I figured it would, more government offices are in Southern Ontario. I ended up in Toronto, working for the Ministry of Community and Social Services, which was the same ministry as in Thunder Bay, but one was a regional and this one was the corporate office. And then I got a one-year temporary contract assignment that kept getting extended for about 5 years. And finally I became successful through a competition process as an human resources advisor. So that's sort of my path to where I am now, and like was mentioned, I think it's more important for me to answer your questions than for me to stop talking.
Okay, well, thank you, Terry. And Scott, maybe if you would like to go next?
Sure. Hi, everybody. I'm Scott Allardyce, and I'm a York graduate, so you can hold that against me. I graduated in 1990 with a degree in political science and history. It took me a year to find a job after I graduated. When I graduated, it was 1990, and there was a major recession going on. Nothing like the recession that we've experienced now, but still a recession. And it took me a year just to get an interview. And I remember how excited I was when I got my first interview, because my parents are like, is he ever going to get out of the house? Because he can't seem to get his foot in the door. And my first job interview was with the CBC. And I was offered a job right after the interview. And I thought to myself, this is great. I had my first interview and I got my first job. So they said to me that I would start on the following Monday. And this was a Friday morning I had the interview. So I thought, this is great. And it was for a research analyst. So I show up on Monday and they said, Scott, didn't anybody call you Friday afternoon? And I said, no, why? And they said, well, there were budget cuts Friday afternoon and your job was one of the jobs that was cut. So we're gonna have to let you go. And I said, but I hadn't even started. So I had to call my dad and say to my father, could you come pick me up? Because I don't know how I'm gonna get home, because you were gonna pick me up at the end of the day, and the end of the day is now, evidently. So that was pretty discouraging. And a week later, I got a job interview for the government as a as a junior policy advisor, and I went, and I wasn't expecting much because I was still very angry and upset over my first job. But I got offered that position, and I've been in the Ontario government for now 20 years at various policy levels. One of the things that I do is a good friend of mine, Jane Green Black, is in the audience. Jane has me as a mentor in the Learning Disabilities Mentorship Program, which is also run out of York, where I help students find jobs. That's one of the things I do. And if I can help you guys find jobs, I'm willing to do that. I'm willing to work with you guys if that's what you want me to do, and happy to do so. And I have a number of students that come and see me. And another program that I created, we call it the Connections Program in my ministry. That's for students with disabilities to come into the Ministry of Municipal Affairs and Housing for one day for a job shadowing opportunity. We'll be running the program again this year. If you're interested, I have business cards here. I'd like you to take one at the end of our discussion and contact me if you're interested in pursuing that as an area of interest. So I'm now gonna, like Terry, be quiet, and I wanna hear from you guys what you think. So thank you very much.
Okay,
thank you.
And Kay, if you would like to
go next,
please.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, and I would just like to say it is a pleasure to be here this afternoon to speak with you, and I should introduce my four-legged partner on the floor here. His name is Jordan, and he's 2 years old, and he's a bit of a ham when he's not working. Anyway, I'm one of those individuals, some of you may identify with this, who didn't really come to a career path very easily or very directly. I actually did get involved in a number of careers before I actually found what it was that I really felt I was suited for and enjoyed doing. And so I would just like to say in that regard, don't be discouraged if at first you find that you are not certain as to what it is you really love to do. I think through experience sometimes we have to, through trial and error, find out what works for us and what doesn't. And with respect to that, I would like to say that when you are being interviewed for a position, just remember that the interview is a two-way process. You also are interviewing the employer to see if this, in fact, is something that you think you would like to do, and that this is a corporation or a charitable organization, not-for-profit, whatever, or the private sector, that this is a place you feel that you would be proud to work and consider, the values and the benefits and so on. But it is a two-way process. So I'll just tell you a little bit about my kind of checkered past in terms of my job career search. I attended Fanshawe College in London, Ontario, in the early 70s, which says a little bit about my age. And following that, I studied social work and behavioral science. So I spent the next 5 or 7 years working in the area of rehabilitation, working with individuals with developmental disabilities. Then I went to the CNIB and actually managed an office for a couple of years in North Bay, which gave me a great deal of transferable skills. And I was very nervous about accepting that job because I thought, maybe I wouldn't have all of the skills to run an office, but my boss was very supportive and just said, we expect you'll make a few mistakes. If you don't, it means you're not working hard enough, so go ahead. And so I suddenly was thrown into working with boards and fundraising and client service, and it was a truly a great learning experience. So I think what I learned from that is that it's wonderful to be able to have the opportunity to work as hard as you can and try as many things as you can, and someone will tell you when to stop if you've gone over the line. But that was indeed a wonderful opportunity. And through that, I think I learned that I enjoyed management, and I also enjoyed working with people. So from there, I went, I studied the real estate program, and I think I was the first blind real estate agent in Ontario, a woman at least. I decided that I'd like to do a bit of quite a different path. So I studied property law and wrote the exams and became a real estate agent. Now, that wasn't perhaps the best career choice for someone who isn't able to see very much. I had to hire drivers, and I was presenting offers at midnight and so on. And although I was very happy that I was able to sell as much as anyone else in our firm, it was pretty stressful. And I found in the end that, it just wasn't probably the position that I wanted to be in long term. I would jokingly say to my friends that the good news about being a blind real estate agent is that I could look at a house and say with a straight face, the roof looks fine to me. So, mm-hmm. But at any rate, I decided after a year that I would move on again, and I'd had a little more business under my belt now. And that's when I started working for Canada Mortgage and Housing Corporation in human resources. And this is where I think if any of you have an opportunity to accept an internship, which is what I did for 1 year, that was where my real career began, because I learned that I loved working in the area of human resources. I had wonderful people who mentored me. I started doing a lot of training and development, and from there, as they say, the rest is history. I started studying courses through the HRPAO. I started doing more and more training and development for Canada Mortgage and Housing, and then went to the Ontario government, where I worked for 6 years in the area of training and development, and then landed into the banking area again, working largely in training and development. And now at Scotiabank, I'm still doing a little bit of training and development, but more so staffing and recruitment, which I really enjoy very much. So it took me a lot of years to decide what I really, really wanted to do, but it was worth the journey. And I learned every job, and I would say this to you, even though the first job that you get may not be the most exciting, or you think, well, I don't know about this, you will learn a great deal from the people you work with, the organization, and I would say, don't be too worried if you think this is not exactly where I want to end up. You'll have to work your way up, but every position that you take, I guarantee you will learn a great deal. What I learned as a person with a disability going into job interviews was how to really present myself in a way that that put people at ease, because as many of you will know, having a disability often creates a level of discomfort for the individual or individuals who are interviewing us. So I tried to be as upfront as I could be about what I thought the interviewer's fears and apprehensions might be, and in a very, without emphasizing the disability, I would try to compensate in a way that, I would say, you're probably wondering how I would read given the fact that I can't see, and I would explain, well, I have this technology, on my computer, and it enables me to access the screen audibly and so on. And I get around by using, at that time I had a cane, but of course now I have a guide dog. And I just tried in a very, you know, nonchalant way to alleviate the individual's fears. And I think the feedback that I got from various employers after the fact was that the reason I was hired was because they saw that I did have the skills that they were looking for, but not all of them. And they said to me, we figure you can always learn the technical stuff. Like, that's not going to be an issue. You can learn on the job. But what we really liked was your enthusiasm and your confidence level, and that we felt you would be a very good team player, that you seemed to have great interpersonal skills. And so, again, if there was one piece of advice that I would leave you with when it comes time to being interviewed, that would be to really, really practice. You know, you have to practice the interview process, answering questions, because you'll be nervous. And don't be afraid to ask for more time to think about something, but do practice that initial smile when you first go in, and if you can appear to be very enthusiastic and passionate about, you know, working, I think that will do you a huge amount of, it will be very, very helpful to you. And also, I know many of you will be already practicing this, but if you can, go into the websites of the corporations for which you will be applying and really read up on them. Sometimes we have individuals, you know, we say, well, what area of the bank are you interested in? And they'll say, well, what do you have? what are they? And I know that while it must be confusing to individuals outside of a particular industry to not understand quite how the various industries work, it really is impressive if you can go in and read up, and so that you have a pretty good idea where you think you fit, so that, you know, you can say, well, I've got these skills, and I notice that, you know, someone needs to have sales background for this position or whatever, and that will serve you very well if you can demonstrate that you actually took the time to research the organization, and that you are not walking in cold. And remember that it's not all about, you know, what can they do for you, but from an employer's perspective, they are looking at, you know, what can you do for us? And so the more you can leverage yourself that way to show what an asset you will be, the better off, you know, you will be. And I think that is where I will leave it too. As I say, I floundered a lot, so if you can be focused, and some people are very fortunate to know from the beginning what it is they really want to do, and their educational path takes them there. I'm still learning, and in fact, I'm currently doing my master's at York in the area of disability studies, which I'm finding very interesting, and I think most organizations do value continuous learning, and so if you demonstrate that desire also, I think it will come across as a very positive attribute. So thank you very much for my time, and I would be happy to answer any questions also.
Great, thank you very much, Kay.
Thank you.
So thank you. So you've had an opportunity to hear from our three panel speakers. So now we'll start to move into our question and answer period. When you have a question, if you can just please raise your hand, ask the question, and then I'll repeat it to make sure that everyone can hear. As you heard from our three panel speakers, we have a wealth of knowledge and experience and backgrounds. So again, it's very informal, so please feel free to ask the questions that are important to you. So who would like to go first? Whoever has a question, who would like to begin? So as a person with a physical disability, and when you go for an interview, how do you bridge that gap to the employer and show and demonstrate that you are an asset to that potential employer in an interview and bridge that gap through the interview process. If all three of you maybe have suggestions on how you might like to answer that.
I'll let you gentlemen go first.
If you want to begin.
Okay. I don't think there's a number one or the perfect solution to it. The way I would see it, I mean, I'm just very outgoing and very outspoken, and I have no problem telling it exactly how. I'm very upfront with what it is, and I just, as long as you portray confidence to whoever you're talking to, whoever you're applying for, and show that you have the skills that they're looking for, and show the sort of initiative, showing that you're not afraid to sort of push, not necessarily make change, but that you're not afraid to go the extra mile to make sure that you maintain that job. Because as we know, with a person with a disability, we are going to be fighting up an uphill battle a little bit. So just by being able to push that a little bit more, that's helpful. I know when I went for my interview for the internship program, I was trying to get prepared, but I was coming back from Toronto actually at the time, and I didn't get to prepare very much. And I went in the first, and it was when I set up the interview, I forgot that I had this all planned up. I went, got home late, I went to bed late, got up early to go for the interview. I should have been all nervous and should have been whatever, but I think it was that I didn't have time to be nervous, and I just, and I wasn't prepared, but I flew by the seat of my pants. Not telling you not, don't do this, but in some ways I think it served me okay in this case because I had no nerves, and I just, it just went off so well, and it was probably the best interview that I've ever done, which is really strange because, yes, you should prepare, and I've done that ever since, but for some reason, I just was carefree, just went with it, just flowed. And Kay's right, do some research beforehand, learn about the organization, be prepared to ask them questions, because if you show interest in what they're offering you or what you're applying for and the organization, then that shows that you're putting some effort into why you want to apply for them, and in turn you're able to show what you're able to offer them.
So just to kind of summarize that, so to really be prepared, to be genuine, be yourself. Maybe that's where the flying by the seat of your pants came in, the genuineness. Yeah. Really being concrete and showing your skills and assets and having that self-confidence. Right. Yeah, okay.
Don't be afraid to be yourself. At the end of the day, we all have disabilities. I mean, I have a number of disabilities. I have cerebral palsy. I have cancer. And I have a few other minor disabilities to that as well. And at the end of the day, it's a challenge. And I'm not going to tell you it's going to be easy. Because the cold hard facts are, we as people with disabilities probably have to work twice as hard to achieve half as much. And that's a reality that we all face. How we approach that reality is simple. We have to make sure, in my opinion, and some people will argue with me, but disclosing what you need in terms of accommodation up front in the interview process is always better, in my opinion, than waiting until after you get the job and then going to your employer and saying, okay, now that I have the job, I have to discuss how my disability will impact my work. If you do that up front, during the process, I think you stand a better chance of impressing your employer for being honest. The other thing that I would say is that you've already accomplished so much, all of you. Despite your disabilities, you've all accomplished a lot. When I went to university, I believe the statistic was only 11% of people with disabilities went on beyond high school. in post-secondary education, and of that 11%, only 1% of that group actually graduated. So the fact that you are all here demonstrates your willingness to work hard and to achieve something which is very difficult to achieve. So you've already accomplished a great deal. So be proud of that accomplishment, because not everybody can do it. Because if everybody could do it, universities would be filled to the rafters with students. So be proud of what you've done. But also remember that you're always stretching for the next goal. And don't be afraid to try something, even if it's a bit scary.
I would echo exactly what has already been said. And I think that one of the challenges that people with disabilities have, I believe, is that, you know, as we have evolved, whether it's through school, through whatever, there has been a tendency sometimes for individuals to perceive us differently, and that is, in some cases, to think that different than also means less than, and that's something that I think we all have to fight hard not to really accept, because you know, everyone is so resourceful. I always think that, you know, people with disabilities have so much more going for them sometimes, just because we have had to, you know, figure out different ways of doing things, how to get there, how to, you know, figure this out, how to educate other people about how to treat us or assist us, and without realizing it, you know, everyone has really already done some major things and has really been resourceful and adaptable. And I think someone once said to me that, you know, they, and this is a little bit of a generalization, but that, you know, people with disabilities don't tend to sweat the small stuff. And I think that might be true. You know, we kind of are just busy getting on with our job and the day. And I think that, you know, from a self-esteem perspective, you know, you need to practice. Often we have behavioral-based interviews. So someone will say, tell me about a time when you accomplished this or dealt with a difficult situation, or you met a deadline and you multitasked. So if you can start thinking of all the things that you have done, it could be a volunteer position, doesn't matter, where you have, you know, been successful and excuse me, managed, you know, met your goals and accomplished something. Those can help you to really use that as a little stepping stone, you know, just to get to the next point. But I think, you know, go in believing in yourself and be yourself and smile and be enthusiastic, and that will go a huge way. And the other individual is already going to know that there's a disability, so you're not going to be shocking anyone. So I think you just take it from there, and it'll be hopefully just like interviewing anyone else. So thank you.
Thank you, Kay. Okay, so who else would like to ask a question?
Sure, I'd be happy to. What happened was a couple years ago, Jane Greenblack from the university contacted me and asked me to be a mentor in her program for students with learning disabilities. I also have a learning disability as well, on top of having cerebral palsy. So I thought it was a great opportunity, because when I was a student at York, there was nobody to mentor me. And I thought, here's a way that I can give back to a university that gave me so much. So I went and I started mentoring some students, and I'm on my fourth student now. In the first year that I was there, a whole bunch of students who were being mentored by other individuals came and approached me and said, I'd really like to job shadow you because I'm interested in policy as a possible career. And I had about 9 students approach me, and I couldn't mentor all 9 of them. So I began to think about, well, what I can't say yes to some and no to others. I have to either say yes to everybody or no to everybody. So what I thought was the best way was to create a program at my ministry, and I named it Connections. And basically, we allow students to come in, and what they do in the morning, they hear about how government works, what some of the career opportunities are in government, and in the afternoon portion of the day, they actually are teamed up one-on-one with staff, and they learn about things like policy development, operational planning. Some people are interested in law, so we had a few of our lawyers pull those people out and work with them. So it's a really intense one-day program, and I still connect with those students on a regular basis. I meet with a bunch of them, and other of the people that are involved with the program at my office also meet with some other students as well, continuously, and we provide them information on jobs. We provide them information on how the government hiring process works, because it's very convoluted for a lot of the new people. So I would encourage you to consider applying for this year's program. We've had the program for 2 years. The first year we had 9 students. Last year we had 40 students. York University was the only school we allowed in the first year because it was a connection that I had made. But last year we opened it up to all universities and colleges in Ontario, and we had to send students away. We couldn't accept every application we received. So if you're interested in the program, I created it, so I'm going to sing its praises, but it's something worthwhile, and I would hope that all of you would consider it.
I can add something to it.
Sure, go ahead.
This is more of a general, within the OPS itself has the cards are at the back of the table, but through the general Ontario.ca under the careers portal, which pulls to a ministry called the Youth and New Professionals Secretariat. They're the ministry that, or division that sort of supports students or bringing in new employees. And one of them is the co-op program. And it has numerous positions. It's basically a co-op position with any of the different areas offered in the government, whether it could be HR, it could be information technology, it could be policy, it could be any one that you can think of. There's ones with under finance, and usually what happens is that you get paid to learn this and whatnot, and there's basically different terms, and that's governed by the actual institution. So here at York, and it can be built into six different terms, and you are paid at the level at a certain percentage of the classification of the position. So there's that program. Also, there's the internationally trained internship program. And of course, this wouldn't exactly apply because you're in college, but we also have the summer student program. So there's different ways to sort of get experience or involved at sort of the onset or in different ways. But definitely the one way to check out is through a co-op, if that's available through your program or whatever that you're taking. So.
Jane?
Sure. A lot of students wondering whether they should check off on the application form whether or not they have a disability when they're first applying. And if they do decide to check that off, what actually happens with that information? Does it assist them in obtaining employment, or does that information really go in one? Where does it go? So maybe you can address the application process.
Well, I think I'll answer that first. I could only speak to the Ontario government because I don't have experience in the private sector. I think I'm too good for the private sector. No offense. No offense. But basically, we have, in the Ontario government, we have to meet individual accommodation. And there's one rule, and a lot of you students will know this rule if you're studying human rights or disability rights. You'll know that there's a undue hardship is really the only defense that an employer can use to say, I cannot accommodate an employee or a potential employee. But since the Ontario government is so large and has a great deal of money outside of what the regular employers would have, many accommodations are met. Some might have to be altered a wee bit, but most of them are met. That information, at least from an Ontario government perspective, I know is kept confidential. And when you disclose, you're only disclosing to your manager. Your manager might share that with the director who's above the manager, but I don't think it goes beyond that point, and HR might not even be aware because it's between you and your hiring manager that you've disclosed. And that information is kept in your personnel file, which is very limited to the number of people that can actually go in and see it. I don't know how the private sector works, but I know that's how it works in the public sector. So, and they take it very seriously when there are breaches to those policies. And I remember when I was, I had a difficult situation with the manager when I first worked in the OPS. He asked me to go and talk to a professional career counselor about my career objectives. And one of the things that the counselor wrote a report saying that Scott is quite capable of doing the job that he's been assigned, there shouldn't be an issue. He actually put on the front of the report, should not be put in personnel file. Where did they find it? They found it in the personnel file. So they took it out, they gave it back to me, and they said this should have never have gone in where it was. You can do what you want. So I destroyed it because it could have affected my whole career if somebody had actually said, oh, they said this guy to, you know, this guy isn't able to do his job. This is why the report was written. And it didn't say that at all. But the fact is that mistakes are made occasionally, but hopefully with the right policies in place, things like that can be corrected, and they were. So I'd be interested to hear what Scotiabank does, actually, to be honest.
Sure. Yeah. We are federally regulated, and therefore we have to keep a very close track of our workforce analysis and also our compliance. So in other words, we have targets that we do have in place in terms of ensuring that we have equitable representation, you know, of people with disabilities, of Aboriginal people, you know, women, etc. Not just in terms of numbers in the bank, but also where people are in terms of levels of career, position levels. So we are audited by the Human Rights Commission on an annual basis, and we must demonstrate through our people report, which means we have our workforce analysis there, that shows at a glance exactly what the workforce demographics look like in our bank. So now, and that is why during our census report, we have surveys that go out on a regular basis, and we ask our employees, you know, 60 some thousand, if they would identify themselves as, you know, a person with a disability or, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Now, visible minority, whatever. When you identify yourself as a person with a disability, you need not disclose the nature of your disability. That is, there is no need to explain whether it's a hidden or visible disability, et cetera, et cetera. You know, in that survey, so all that they know is that we have X number of individuals with disabilities. Now, we were just, you know, having said that, in terms of your personal manager, I know there are stigmas attached to certain disabilities greater than others. For example, you know, I notice people with mental health disabilities sometimes are more reluctant to disclose the nature of their disability, and I understand that. Sometimes people with epilepsy also just do not want to disclose that, and that is a personal choice. However, I myself feel that, you know, I think I would want my direct manager to understand what disability I have, so that when I go to that person and say, okay, I need a little bit of flexibility this week in terms of my schedule, maybe I'm seeing a therapist, whatever, that there would be some understanding as to why that would be, or, you know, we have individuals who do experience depression to the extent that, or anxiety disorders, that sometimes would mean, okay, there might be one day every month or two or whatever that I have to work from home, or I have to have some flexibility, or, you know, whatever. So you know what? That's my take on it. I kind of prefer to disclose, and in this case, I can't really hide the fact that I have a guide dog, so that people know I can't see well, and I also don't hear very well either. But people can have multiple disabilities, of course, and it is highly confidential. We also there are only, I think, two people in the entire corporation who have access to you know, the information in those files, and also we have a centralized accommodation fund, which means that if you go to your manager and say, you know, I need blah, blah, blah in order to do my job, in my case, it would be JAWS software plus, you know, maybe a few other things, the manager will never come to you and say, oh, we can't afford that. my budget, I didn't allow for it, because it is all coming through a centralized fund. So it will never impact that direct department's budget. So that's a good thing. And, you know, your accommodation is not going to put someone else's safety in jeopardy, and it's not going to bankrupt the bank. So it will never be a case of undue hardship. So we have a policy that, you know, says, you know, it's a joint responsibility. You discuss with your manager what you might need, and things change. It's not going to be etched in stone. Next year, your role might be different, or technology has changed. So you would have a welcoming and safe environment to go in and say, you know what, I've really appreciated working with this accommodation. Now at this point, I need a change or something different. So, you know, don't ever be nervous about requesting you know, a slightly different kind of accommodation. And when you think about it, everybody in the workplace is using some kind of accommodation. Ours isn't really that special, it's just different. You know, everybody's running around with a BlackBerry now, and you know, some of the executives are taking little laptops and things to their cottages, and everybody works differently. The lights are accommodation for sighted people. We like to point that out. But, you know, so, I mean, everybody has an accommodation, whether they think of it that way. So don't ever feel badly about asking for a particular type of accommodation in order to perform the functions of the job, because that is the way you have to work, and that's just the way it is. It's just you work a little differently. So that's it. Yeah. So we're very careful too.
I can just add, Scott's pretty much explained it, but how it works. But yeah, I think from the Ontario government's point of view, again, that's where only I can speak. It's a duty to accommodate. There's no reason. With undue hardship, which the Ontario government could never claim. So they have that information that whether you disclose or you don't disclose, you're right, it just resides in the corporate file, which housed in HR, and the only people that can access it are either ourselves that are carded to be able to get in to look at it, or the employee themselves. And when the employee comes to look at it, there are also one of us that sit with them while they review their corporate file. So it's not something that's easily accessed or easily distributed. And yes, the Ontario, they have a right to accommodate regardless. I echo the others that I think it's better to disclose, because if your manager knows what kind of accommodations you require upfront, then they know what they're dealing with, and it's much more forward, and it's easier to, they usually don't have a problem making those kinds of accommodations and whatnot. The other thing I wanted to mention, because this is a concern usually about recruitment when you're applying for a job, and they are also now required that trying to make sure that the ads and the recruitment process is sort of barrier-free, which includes not just barrier-free so that you have, whether it's more time to do the written assignment, whether it's whatever it is, they are required when you are chosen for an interview to put on that thing is that, do you require any form of accommodation for the interview or for that screening process? And you can indicate whatever it is that you may need, whether it's technology, some form of technology or whatnot. When I first went for my interview, surprisingly enough, they did not know. I think I ticked it off that I did, because I usually do, so I don't know why I wouldn't. They didn't realize or didn't look at it that I had a disability, and they're like, oh. So then they were scrambling to sort of sort things up, but you know, as long as they worked it out and okay. And then when I went to meet my manager my first time, they never shared with him that I had a disability either. So when I came in the first day, he said, I wish they would have told me, because then I could have been somewhat prepared beforehand and gotten it set up better for you. But again, it's part of being flexible and knowing that they will make a change. You just don't, it's not sometimes always going to be there right when you walk through the door. But I have never met anyone that's been not willing to make those adjustments when it's needed. So.
One of the questions that I often hear from students as a career counselor is sometimes students will come in and they're wondering what type of supports or type of accommodations are available at a workplace once they're hired. So maybe if you can just speak briefly about just some examples of various accommodations that are available for persons that are hired with a disability.
Well, it's pretty much open the door to anything that sort of meets that person's needs. Again, because the government needs to fit those needs, but there are, you know, again, all the internet or technologies, whether it be like mentioned, like JAWS or Dragon Naturally Speaking, or it might be just be modifying the workstation so that you can get, you know, up to the desk properly, or be, in my case, I need, as we all know, when you need to sort of, when your computer is locked, you have to hit Control Delete, which are spread all over the keyboard, and there's no way with one hand that I can reach all three buttons. So I've got IT in to remap the keys, and they're right beside one another. So I've got it. So it can be something very, very involved to something that's very simple. So it's basically up to the needs of that individual, and they will find a way to sort of overcome them.
I have a system that I use on my computer called Dragon Dictate. Has anybody heard of Dragon Dictate? I see a few heads nodding. Basically what it is it allows me, because of my physical disability, I can't type very well. So it allows me to speak to my computer and the words pop up on the screen. It's pretty cool. Except when it doesn't want to listen to me and it gives me swear words. in the middle of a briefing note for the minister, and I have to read it very carefully before I send it up, because I don't want the minister to say, why is this guy swearing at me in the note? But yeah, that happened once, but I caught it before it got upstairs. But that's one of the accommodations I have. Another one is that when I started working, I used to fall quite a bit in the office, especially after long days. One of the jobs that I had, I worked as an executive assistant to the deputy minister. And that was where I'd start at 7 in the morning, and I'd go to about 10 at night, working in the office with the deputy. The deputy is the highest civil servant in any ministry. The deputy minister is the highest that you can get. So I was actually his policy person. And I remember I used to fall quite a bit. So they got me a wheelchair. And they said, use the wheelchair around the office so you don't fall. I don't require using a wheelchair, but I have one in the office because it helps me. I get very fatigued. And I don't fall anymore because I'm not fatiguing myself throughout the day. So those are two accommodations. The other thing that I will tell you is that your disabilities will change. I remember when I was at this campus, I could walk from one end of the campus to the other and not even break a sweat, not even be tired, because I was in pretty good shape in my early 20s. Now I don't think I could do it. Your disabilities will change over time. You have to learn to adapt to the changes and also anticipate what you have to do to stay ahead of them as well. So just some food for thought.
So I just want to add, I wanted to quickly, I do have an, because again, I can't type very quickly with one hand, I was able to, I have an admin assistant that's brought in through a temporary service agency that assists me from all day to help speed me up and do my administrative stuff, whether it's photocopying, scanning, helping me type the emails. So basically that makes me, she's my hands. So that's, just wanted to share that.
And I would just add also that myself also, although I have computers that with speech screen readers and so on, there are times when it just would take so long, or perhaps the form you need to fill out is not fully accessible or compatible with the type of technology that you have. So there's where I too would use human support. So I have someone, maybe 2 hours every 2 weeks that just to fill in forms or do something that would take me a very long time otherwise to do. We have a number of people at our bank who are deaf or hard of hearing, and some individuals use sign language interpreters. Others might use like a type of BlackBerry that they can easily exchange information rather than the older system of the TTY or system and so on. We also have policy adaptations so that if someone does require time, it's kind of like when we have child care or elder care, sometimes an individual will need to start a little bit later in the morning because they have to drop their kids at school. We have kind of the same flexibility in terms of an individual who may, through whether it's Wheel-Trans demands or whatever, it might be more beneficial to start a little bit earlier and finish earlier, or start a little bit later and finish later. So depending on the job, if that is quite doable, then we do have a number of people who take advantage of flex time, and including a number of people who would work several days a week from home, their home office. And again, because it's less fatiguing, or it's more practical. So there's many different types of accommodation, and technology is wonderful, but it also can be a little bit of an extra barrier when it doesn't isn't compatible with the mainstream application. So we're always working on that. But so that's about it. Yeah.
Great. Okay. So thank you. So this concludes the question and answer period of our event today, and we'll be transitioning very shortly to the meet and greet. So just to summarize, really we heard a lot of really great information this afternoon. A lot of great questions were asked. We talked a little bit about the examples of accommodations at the work site, the employer's duty to accommodate. We talked a bit about the importance of really focusing on your demonstrated skills, the abilities that you have, being yourself, being confident when you're presenting in an interview. Scott had talked a bit about the Connections Program, the Learning Disabilities Mentorship Program. I know Terry spoke a bit about the Youth and New Professionals, the Co-op Program. Faye gave a lot of really good examples about trying several careers, trying different areas to find out where your passions lie. And again, having confidence as you go along. All three of them had focused on that as well. So this again concludes our question and answer period. On behalf of the Career Center, I'd like to very much thank both again, Terry, Scott, and Kay. Thank you very much.